Welcome back to another episode of Sustainable Idaho here on KISU. Sustainable Idaho explores issues such as Idaho's water, energy, agriculture, and climate. This show is a partnership between Portneuf Resource Council, Idaho State University's Sustainability Club, and KISU. Thank you to those organizations for making Sustainable Idaho possible. This week, our host is Christopher Brown.
2 weeks ago, we did a segment on the issue of salmon recovery on the Snake River and the proposed plan to remove four lower Snake River hydroelectric dams. Recently, the federal government's finalized environmental impact statement rejected the proposal, despite recognizing its likely effectiveness in restoring healthy salmon populations. This week, I was able to speak with Dan Stone, a policy analyst with the Shoshone-Bannock tribes who works directly with salmon restoration projects in the region. We turn now to my discussion with Dan. I first asked Dan to provide an overview of how low salmon populations affect the culture and economies of native communities.
So in terms of economic security, ready here as a native community, is to base an estimate of how many fish we would need to take for our entire membership of approximately 6,000 members, assuming that each of those members should have equal access to this source of food as they would have traditionally. So based on some of our previous fish consumption surveys, we've estimated that each member should have access to several healthy fish meals per week, which would equal approximately 18 salmon per year. Under this current paradigm of low abundance that we're experiencing right now, as an entire tribe, we harvest a range of 500 to 1500 salmon per year, depending on how it returns. So we're obviously short of the tens of thousands of salmon we need to secure that source of high quality organic protein for our membership. The lack of salmon in abundance means that a tribal member is now supplementing their diet with other potentially more expensive and less nutritious sources of protein throughout the year. When we go back to the cultural side of things, and I always tell people that culture is really the foundation of how we perceive the world. So traditionally, our people engaged in all kinds of methods to procure salmon, and we would take fishing quantities from basically all the tributaries in the Snake River Basin. And each of those fishing locations became a part of a cultural landscape that tie our ancestors' lifeways in our homelands to the current generation. And so from a non-tribal perspective, it might seem like a fish is a fish is a fish, no matter where you catch it or how you catch it. But for the tribes and our membership, the act of fishing in that specific place, it opens almost a direct line between multiple generations of members who pass on oral history about significance of that particular fishing place and the history of where we came from and who we are as a people. So in short, the low abundance of salmon in the Snake River Basin really limits our ability to pass on these culture and traditions or secure our economic stability for the next generation. And without salmon on the landscape and as a part of our culture, we're at risk of losing a really significant piece of our tribal identity for generations to come, potentially.
What policies specifically have the tribes been advocating for regarding recovery and specifically about the dams themselves?
Really, our policy is kind of a ridgetop to ridgetop look. It's a natural rivers policy. So it's like everything in that ecosystem from ridgetop to ridgetop is basically tied together by that really thin ribbon of blue on the valley floor, you know, by the river. And our goal is to promote a healthy assemblage of native species and secure our right to access those foods like we had reserved in the Fort Bridger Treaty of 1868. You know, from our perspective, the healthiest systems are those that most closely represent those natural functions of a riverine ecosystem. And that anthropogenic modifications, whether it's dams, minings, diversions, logging, can all contribute to a loss of species. And so those policies drive the mission of the tribe's Fish and Wildlife Department to advocate for native species and to, you know, implement projects on the landscape that try to bring us back to those natural conditions or normative conditions in these river ecosystems.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you have encountered trying to engage with the policy process on this?
You know, we're fully engaged in all of these regional coordination efforts with various federal agencies and state agencies that oversee these recovery processes for salmon and resident fish. The difficult thing, I think, is that there are so many issues tied to salmon recovery, specifically things like the hydro system, the Columbia River system itself, and how the hydro operations are managed. There's also issues with international fisheries, and then there's also interactions between recreational fisheries and subsistence fisheries like the tribes have. And so some of the really difficult issues are, you know, although we're all basically playing the same game, meaning salmon recovery is the ultimate goal for everybody, it's that each of our unique perspectives lends itself to kind of almost an intrinsic conflict between each of the parties that are involved. So every tribe is going to want to have access to these first foods. Every tribe up and down the basin, all of the Columbia River tribes, 13, 15, 17, however you count it, multiple tribes looking for the same access to that first food. It's really difficult, I guess, to reconcile each of those unique perspectives in a way that's meaningful and long-lasting.
The feds recently released the final version of their report, basically saying what we expected, which is that the dams won't be removed and that isn't on the table. But is there anything else that you think people need to know about?
Of all those alternatives presented in this document, it was our opinion that selecting the approach that modified the hydro system itself and restored the Snake River to a normative function is the best chance of recovery for anadromous fish in Idaho. And in that document, the final EIS, they offered a section called Tribal Perspectives. The tribes authored a document that's about 20 or 30 pages in length, and it really details a lot of the issues that we were talking about. And I would highly encourage anyone to go look at that in that final EIS. It's relatively easy to find with the hyperlinks. So if you're interested in more in-depth view from the tribe, take a look at that Tribal Perspectives section.
Thanks to Dan for taking the time to talk with me and to the Shoshone-Bannock tribes. Special thanks to Randy L. Teton and Shannon Ainsley for helping make this interview possible. This week's segment gives a platform to the Shoshone-Bannock tribes to discuss their perspective on the issue of salmon restoration. See links to relevant resources used in this show at kisu.org/programs. Next Tuesday, Julie will highlight the recent and upcoming efforts of the ISU Sustainability Club. Thank you for listening this morning. Join us next week for Sustainable Idaho.
Sustainable Idaho airs every Tuesday morning at 7:35. We explore issues such as Idaho's water, energy, agriculture, and climate. Thank you to our partners, the Portneuf Resource Council, ISU Sustainability Club, and KISU. Links to this and past programs can be found at kisu.org/program/sustainableidaho.